To imagine that there are two students taking a college class, a history class, and one student attends class, but outside of class, that student does the assigned readings, and not only the assigned readings, but reads other material as well related to the topic. Not only does the student attend class and do the assigned reading and read extra material, but the student also attends lectures that are not mandatory related to the topic. And the student watches videos and reads articles about what they're studying in class. So if there's one student who's taking a history class, imagine the other student taking the history class, goes to class, and does nothing else. Reads nothing outside of class, watches nothing outside of class, attends nothing outside of class. The only exposure that they get to the material will be what they receive in class those few hours a week. Will there be any difference between the two students? Will not only the learning that happens, the impact of the material, will the experience of class be different? When those students are in class, will their experience of class be different? Will one get more out of it than the other? Will one be able to give more than the other? Of course, the answer is yes. Imagine two athletes. One athlete diligently practices for hours a week. He takes care of himself. He gets enough sleep. He eats the right food. He drinks plenty of water. And he practices his sport for hours at a time. And he shows up to games, of course. Imagine the other athlete shows up to games, but never practices. He stays up all night. He eats junk food, never drinks water. Is their experience of the game going to be different? When those two players are playing in the game those few hours a week, would their experience be different? And of course, again, the answer is yes. The experience of the thing that they do for a few hours a week will be vastly different, depending on the difference of what they do outside of those activities. So imagine one more thing, if you will. Imagine a Christian who, during the week, during their regular day, studies the Bible, engages in prayer, is in close fellowship with other Christians, is striving to be obedient to what they know God wants them to do, is meditating on the Word, and they go to church. Imagine another Christian who never opens a Bible. They never pray. They never have any contact with any other Christian. And they don't really try to do moment to moment what God wants them to do. That Christian also goes to church. Will their experience of church be different? Will the Christian who is giving it all they have outside of church have a different church experience than the Christian who doesn't do anything outside of church? Obviously, the answer would be yes. The experience will be vastly different. We've been talking about, over the last few weeks, how to get the most out of church. We've talked about specific aspects of church, as we'll do this morning: singing, praying, and taking the Lord's Supper. And what we have noticed, and the foundation of what we have been talking about, is this: to get the most out of church, which we want, is church a big deal. Church is a big deal to us. Church matters to us. It's how many hours a week just for church? Been a little confusion about this. That's my fault. I'm just talking about not Bible class. I'm talking about church. How many hours a week? 2 hours a week, max. No more than that. 2 hours. But the importance of church to a Christian is bigger than that, isn't it? Just 2 hours, but the impact of it is huge. We want to get the most out of that, don't we? We want this to be the very best experience and most impactful experience that it can possibly be. How do we do that? To get the most out of church, we have to be putting everything we have into our faith every day. That's how this works. If we're not doing it out there, this is going to be lame. I don't care how amazing the singing is. how on fire the prayer leader is, how on point the Lord's Supper speaker is, or how eloquent, fantastic, and of course, good looking the preacher is. Always laughter with that. I never understand the laughter. But it's not going to make any difference because we're not putting everything into it out. So we get it with athletics. We get it with academics. But we don't always get it with church. So here's the thing. We want church to impact life. We want these 2 hours to impact us, to change us, to help us. We want church to impact life, but it's how we do life that determines the impact of church. It's how we do life that determines the impact of church. It's what happens outside the walls that makes sure that what happens inside the walls are any good. And that's up to all of us. Isn't it what we see in the Bible? You know, if I asked you to tell me what passages in the Bible talk about how to do church, there's basically 4 passages that most of us would think about. There's 2 whole books. Yeah, 1 Timothy and Titus are 3. There's 2 whole books, 1 Timothy and Titus. It's the whole point of those books, how to do church. And then there's some instruction in Ephesians. There's some instruction in Colossians. And there's some instruction in 1 Corinthians about how to do church. But how to do church in those passages is a small stone in a big setting of here's how you do life. The setting of those passages is here's how you do life. Here's a tiny part of that, which is how you do church. And it's when we're getting all of life sort of lined out spiritually that we can get church what it's supposed to be. Again, we've been talking about how to do church. Today we're going to talk about how to get the most out of the sermon. So I would just start with this big idea. This is the big idea. You'll have no trouble engaging with the sermon on Sunday. So this is the baseline of what we want, right? When the preacher stands up, I want to be able to pay attention. I'd like some value. I'd like some help. I'd like something maybe once or twice a year, something profound, maybe something occasionally that would just be really like ding and I really get it now. But at the very least, I would love for somebody to stand up there who can just hold my attention. Just keep me engaged. Here's my suggestion to you. You will have no trouble engaging with the sermon on Sunday if you are engaging with the Bible all week long. You will have no trouble engaging with the sermon. Now listen, look, we all have our moments. I know that. You're never going to be, nobody is. We know this for a fact. When it comes to listening to public speakers, nobody stays locked in the whole time. Some of you look like you do, and I appreciate that. Some of you look great at it. Some of you are just like, you never move. And you're totally locked in. But just scientifically, we know that occasionally at least, there's something going on back there that's not what I'm saying. And that's cool. There's nothing wrong with that. And some are better at it than others. Some are easily distracted. Some are going along just fine. All of a sudden, it's like, ding, ding. It's just, you know, it's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. That's cool. Right? But overall, this is a truism, I think, that you will have no trouble staying engaged in the sermon if you will be engaged with the Bible all week long. Now you may say, nope, not going to work for me. Would you please try it? Would you try? Just try it. Have a persistent, regular, good Bible study habit for 2 weeks and see if it doesn't make a difference. Just try it if you've never tried it. But this is the big idea. Because here's the thing. At this church, there's a lot of things we can't guarantee you that we'll get right. But we can guarantee you this, as a church, the elders, and myself personally. When you come to church here and it's time for the sermon, you're going to get one thing, and that's the Bible. The church is going to make sure of it. The elders are going to make sure of it. And I'm going to make sure of it. You're going to get the Bible, and that's all you're going to get. You're not going to get a lot of, you know, current events and pop psychology, and this is my opinion, and this is what our church board decided. You're not going to get all that stuff. You're going to get the Bible. So follow me on this. When you come to church here, what are you going to get in the sermon? You're going to get the Bible. You're only going to get the Bible. That's all you're going to get is in the Bible. So let me ask you a question. If the Bible doesn't engage your interest through the week, why would it engage your interest for a 40-minute talk on Sunday, a talk that doesn't involve quick video cuts and cool captions and filters and animations? This is not a TikTok video. It will never be a TikTok video. I hope to God it will never be that. This isn't a cartoon. It's not, you know, some marketing video that somebody put together to catch and hold people's attention. It's one guy talking all by himself for 40 minutes. And it's getting longer. And I'm sorry about that. But the older I get, the longer I preach. I don't know why that is. So anyway, it's getting longer. But it's one guy standing up and talking for 40 minutes about the Bible. If you're not interested in the Bible during the week, how could you hope to stay engaged in somebody talking about the Bible for 40 minutes at a time? It's hopeless. There's no way that that's ever going to happen. You're not going to care about a Bible talk just because you're supposed to. Well, I should care. Yeah, you should. I should. This should matter to me. Should. I should be able to pay attention. You should. It doesn't matter. If you're not interested, you're just not interested. And the fact that you should isn't going to matter. Recently, the library here in Carteret County gave a presentation on fossils in Carteret County. I didn't go. Because there aren't many things that interest me less than fossils. I had a kid in one of my classes last year at Gramercy who was, he was all about them fossils, man. He loved those fossils. And so, you know, part of being a teacher is not just giving content, but forming relationships. And so I would say, well, you got there. And man, he would just launch it, this thing about fossils. And my eyes are glazed over, and that's okay. He would do that to me when I started talking. So we had a good relationship. But so the library had this thing about fossils. I don't care about fossils. And I didn't go. If for some reason someone would have forced me to go, you should care about fossils in Carteret County. You're going to go. I'll go, but I'm not going to pay attention. I will be bored to tears, and I will get nothing out of it. Why is that? Because I don't care. Now, a few weeks ago, a couple of friends of mine presented, I think it was about an hour and a half. It was over an hour. Session on how to have a positive, productive, motivated mindset. It's about an hour and a half. They never lost my attention. I never wanted them to stop. When they stopped, I wanted them to keep going. I was locked in for an hour and a half on a session about positive, productive, motivated mindset. Why? Because that's my jam. I love that stuff. I think about this stuff all the time. So when somebody's going to stand up and talk about it, I'm going to right in there. Fossils, positive mindset, no content. You see the difference? If the Bible is your interest all week, guess what will happen? When somebody stands up here to talk about it for 40 minutes, guess what? You're going to listen. You're going to care. It's going to matter to you. So, What we're talking about is seeing something that is essential, and that is that the sermon is a two-person experience. Now, I know it's a collective, but I'm just talking about from your personal perspective. This is a two-person experience. It's me and who? You. Me and you. Now, before I go further, let me say this. As I was going through the sermon this morning, I like it, but it sort of felt like a beatdown. It sort of felt like I was going to give you, and I don't want it to be that. Because I will tell you that there are, most preachers would give anything to preach to you. Most preachers would give anything to preach to you. Now, there are some that aren't because they're boring and dull. And they wouldn't want it. They wouldn't like preaching here. Some preachers would not like preaching here because you're too happy. You're too loud. You're too engaged. Sometimes you talk. You laugh too much. Some preachers don't like that. I think it's cool. But most preachers would love to preach here because most of the time you're very engaged. Like you're right there. If I say something that's remotely funny, you give me a courtesy laugh. Like that. Thank you. Right? If I'm saying something that, you know, you nod your head. Now, none of you will ever match Ray on engagement. Just forget it, right? None of you will ever match Ray on engagement. You can't see everything I see, but some of the faces and the responses I get from Ray are priceless. You'll never match that, but you're good. You're all good. So, I love preaching here. Don't misunderstand what I'm talking about. You are an awesome group to preach. You really are. You really are. You've got most of it down, okay? So this is not, you're a horrible group to preach to. You've got to fix it. It's not what this is, okay? I'm just talking about, in general, how should this thing go? And if you need to correct something, fine, right? So we're all good. The sermon's a two-person experience. You can do your job perfectly, and if I don't do mine, it doesn't go well. The reverse is also true. I can do my job perfectly, but what? If you don't do your job, then what? This doesn't work. See what I'm saying? I was thinking about Jesus in the parable of the sower, right? The sower went out to sow. He sowed the seed. How many soils, how many of those types of soil had a good response? What percentage of those soils had a good response? 25%, right? Roadside ground, rocky ground, thorny ground, good ground, that's 25% had a good response. Who was the sower? Who was the original sower? Jesus. What seed was he sowing? The Word of God. What was the response rate? 25%. On a scale of 1 to 10, how good was Jesus at teaching? 1,000. On a scale of 1 to 10, how good was the message he was bringing? 1,000. So you've got a teacher who's perfect, a message that's perfect, and what? 25%, 75% of the people don't, it doesn't work. What I'm saying is, this is a two-part thing. I've got a part to do, you have a part to do. And only when we both do our part does this thing work at all. It's a two-person experience. It demands the active participation of you and of me. It demands both of us being engaged. So let me ask you a question. What do you expect of me? When I get up here to preach on Sunday, what do you expect of me? You may not have ever verbalized it or even specifically thought about it, but you have expectations of me when I get up here. What are they? So I was thinking about that, and I thought, well, I think probably, first of all, you expect me to try my best to live consistently with what I'm talking about up here. You expect, and you should. And I do. I'm not perfect at it. I do the best I can. But you don't expect me to get up here and talk about the Bible when I don't know anything about it, do you? If I got up here, if we just went and grabbed somebody off the street and they came up here and started talking about the Bible and they didn't know it or try to live it, that wouldn't do you. That'd be horrible. So you expect me to at least be attempting to do this. You expect what I do here to be consistent with what I'm doing out there. That's one thing. You expect me to be prepared, don't you? Do you expect me to be prepared? If you said to me, and I do this sometimes just to attempt to be funny, but if you said to me, what are you talking about this morning? And I said, I have no idea. And you'd go, yeah, that's funny. So what are you talking about? I mean, no, really, I have no idea. I have no clue what I'm talking about. What would you think about? What would you say to that? What? Wait, what? You don't know? Do you know you had to preach? Yeah. And you had a week since life? Yeah. Yeah. But so you didn't do anything? You didn't look at anything and prepare? You written it? No. Going to wing it. Going to jump up there and whatever comes to mind, I'm just going to throw it out there. Boy, talk about it would be interesting, but it would really be dangerous. You expect me to be prepared. You expect me to be fully engaged. You expect me, I think, to be fully engaged, don't you? You expect when I'm up here to have my mind on what? What do you expect me to be thinking about when I'm up here? This, don't you? This is what you expect. He's going to stand up there and preach. And he's going to be fully engaged. He's going to bring some energy. What if I didn't bring energy? What if I just stood up here and... We'll talk about the sermon today. Turn to Matthew 13. About that. You wouldn't put up with that. You expect me to have energy. You expect me to be focused. Don't you? You expect when I, oh, hang on a second. So, what you expect me to be, huh? Joey Green tagged me in. So what was I saying? You expect focus. You expect me when I'm up here to be all about this, I think, right? You expect me to be focused. You expect me to be energetic. You expect all of that. So let me ask you a question. What do you expect of yourself? What do you, when you come to church and you are about to listen to the sermon, what do you expect from yourself? I would suggest, just for your thought, that you expect the same thing of yourself as you do of me. That would be my suggestion. You expect that we're going to talk about the Bible for 40 minutes, that you're interested in the Bible. Well, how do you show your interest in it? You read it during the week. That you prepare. When we're going to talk about how exactly what that means. But I think that you should expect yourself to make some sort of preparation to get something out of it. I think that you should expect of yourself full engagement. You should give energy. Now, we make this really difficult to give energy. Those pews are padded. It's easy to get comfy. Didn't used to be that way, did it? Y'all, some of y'all can remember right back when they were hard wood pews, no padding. And they built them for maximum discomfort. You could try to kind of slouch back in, but you couldn't do that because somehow they built the back of that thing where you just couldn't get comfortable. You couldn't sleep. I tried. You couldn't sleep on. We make it easy. Comfortable temperature. It's maybe a little too warm. The pews are padded. And we make it easy to get comfortable instead of being energetic. When we're listening to the sermon, we need to bring energy. When we're listening to the sermon, we need to bring energy. As much as you can in a padded pew in a comfortable building, you need to bring energy. And you need to bring focus. You need to work on focus. It's not natural. And it's not easy. And we're not going to do it, just be good at it. It's like any other discipline, you got to work on it. You got to work on it. And stay focused. So this is what I think as listeners we should expect from ourselves. You are not a passive observer. This is one of the big mistakes I think a lot of people make in any public speaking situation. You are not a passive observer. You're not a passive observer. I don't know what an observer is, but you're not one. You're not a passive observer. And you are not a passive consumer. This is what most people want from a sermon, or a lot of people want from a sermon. I'm going to let the preacher do all the work. I'm going to sit here and he's just going to pour it into my head and I don't have to do anything. It doesn't work that way. So let me ask you something. Would you like better preaching? I'll tell you something. You think that's funny. But that guy in front, when I was a kid and went to church at a church in Louisville, there was a guy who used to sleep. He sat right in front of us. I remember his name. My mother probably does too. He looked exactly like that every Sunday. I'm not kidding. And there was a little bit of coming out. I'm not kidding. This dude was gone. So anyway, so if I said to you, hey, would you like better preaching? What would your answer be to that? Absolutely. Who doesn't want better preaching? Who doesn't want better preaching? Well, I will tell you how to get it. Be a better Bible student. If you want the preaching to be better, be a better Bible student. I very often, most of the time, in fact, will tell you what we're going to be talking about that night or the next week or whatever. You can take that, read it, be ready, be prepared. That will help. Be a better listener. If you want better preaching, be a better listener. Put yourself in my place. And again, you are a fantastic group of people. This is just an exercise. But put yourself in my place. And imagine speaking to people, some of whom are checked out, some of whom are not listening, some of whom are not only bored, they're not even trying to hide it, some of whom are clipping their nails. Yes, it happens. People think the preacher can't see them. That cracks me up. I see people doing stuff all the time and they think he can't see me. Be a better engager. Be a better engager. I'll say something about that. What do most people say when I'm standing in my appointed, contractually obligated place back there when church is over? What do most people say when they walk out, you reckon? You know what they say? Good sermon. Good sermon. Good sermon. Good sermon. Sometimes great sermon. Some people sound surprised. I always give Larry Whitfield a hard time about this. Larry Whitfield, everybody who's here, he'll be walking out the back, and I'll shake his hand, and he'll go, you know, that was a good sermon. He always sounds surprised. But that's almost a good sermon. Good sermon is, that's fine, whatever, that's fine. Right, that's good, whatever. But let me share with you some things that not just me, but every preacher loves to hear. And the reason I'm telling you this is not so you can do something for me. The reason I'm telling you this is this will make the whole thing better for everybody. Okay? Now, I know, I'm going to give you these ideas. I know what's going to happen here. The smart alecks in the group are going to go about the back and say all of them, I know this, so I'm ready for that. It's okay. But say something like, I particularly like the point about whatever. That thing that you said about, I really appreciated that, or I needed that, or something like that. Right? Or, what you said about this made me think about this. It used to really irritate me when somebody would say, you know, while you were talking about that, I was thinking about this. That used to drive me nuts. But you know what? That's a good thing. We were talking about this, and they were making some other connections that they really needed to make. That's a beautiful thing. Nothing wrong with that. Or say, I have a question about this. I want to ask you something about this. Or, this is my favorite. This is, of all the things that could ever be said to me after, this is my very favorite. I never thought about that before. Or, I never thought about it in that way. That's my very favorite. Never thought about that before. I even like this one when it's said nicely. I disagree with what you said about this. But now this is key. I disagree with what you said about this because of this verse. I don't care that you disagree with what I said if you don't have a verse to back it up. It doesn't matter to me. You can disagree all you want to on opinion. But when somebody says to me, I'm not sure about that, I think maybe you missed it on that because this verse says this, then I will very happily tell you why you're dead wrong, and I was right, but I love that you brought it up, right? Because what do all of these things say? What do all of these things say? I was paying attention, I got something out of it, and it had some impact on my life. Much more than, good sermon, good sermon, good sermon, great sermon. I'm not downing you for that, but just a thought. So, great day in the morning. So, I'm not going to keep you much longer, I promise. It looks like I am, but I'm not. So, in fact, I don't want to chop it up, so I'm just going to stop there and we'll pick that up. So, let me go down. We're going to do the invitation in just a minute because I don't want to chop this up. I want to keep all that together. So, tonight, what we're going to do is Zechariah chapter 9 through 11. Zechariah chapters 9 through 11 is what we're going to do tonight. The title of the sermon is God's Power and Your Problems. Okay, so that's from Zechariah chapters 9 through 11 tonight. And we're going to talk about God's power and your problems. So, you've got problems. Your power doesn't help anything. Your power doesn't fix that. You can use your power on your problems and you've got more problems. What we're going to talk about tonight is how God is bringing His power to their problems, the people we'll talk about tonight, and what that has to say to you. And so that's what we'll do tonight. And then, it's not what I intended, but we'll finish this up, Lord willing, next Sunday morning. And that's what we'll do with that. So still quite a bit to talk about, and I think it's really important to talk about, so we'll do that. So this is our song. Jay, that's the first slide. Admit, I know, that's correct. So we've been talking this month about church, right? We've been talking about church. And church is important. Our world doesn't see church as all that important. Our world doesn't think that church is important. The Bible says that it is. It's very important that we get this right. But the bigger thing that we have to get right is our overall day-to-day relationship personally with God. We can't even be in the church without having a personal relationship with God. We can go to church, but that doesn't make us a child of God. It doesn't make us a Christian. We've been talking about church, and church is important. But it's only important because a person is right with God, because a person is a Christian. So this morning, if you're not a Christian, we need to start with that. This morning, if you're not a Christian, you're in church. That's great. It's where you ought to be. But there's something that needs to get fixed if you're not a Christian. There's something that needs to get done. And it needs to get done now. Because you don't know if you'll have another opportunity. We're always reminded about this, aren't we? The book of Ecclesiastes says it's better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting. We don't like to go to the funeral home, but it's better for us. Why is that? Because it reminds us that that's in the future for all of us. Sometimes like Miss LaVonne, who we said goodbye to yesterday, sometimes like Miss LaVonne, we get to live a very long life and have plenty of opportunities to make things right because you have a lot of years, but we don't always get that. And you don't know that you're going to get that. You don't know that you will have another opportunity. You might think, I'm going to do that. I need to take care of that. And I'm moving toward that. I'm going to get there, but you may not get there because you may not have the chance to get there. And so if you're not a Christian, this is your time. This is your opportunity. And we would love to help you to do that. If you are a Christian, one of the purposes that God has for the church is to help our fellow Christians get the help they need. So we want to do that for you if you need our help this morning. This is an opportunity for anyone that has spiritual need to get the help that they need. But you have to be willing to ask for it. You have to be willing to reach out. If we can help you, let us know. You can do that privately after church, or you can come forward and take a seat on the front as we stand and sing.